or visit either of those websites for information on how to sign up to be informed of upcoming actions in the plugin.
Come back on.
It's using the safety of the mind. If they kill somebody, they only pay a fine. Oh, we can't breathe, but we burn. No, 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 we can't breathe, but we burn. For crying out loud, when we gonna learn that we can't breathe, but we burn. Oh, guys got a way to gasify their stuff. Changes where the poisons go, I think we've had enough. Don't you fall for propane, that fracking is the worst. The energy is green and good for planet Earth. Got to change our course, new way of doing things. Yes, I'm talking solar, water, and the winds of change. Don't really have a choice, and we've got to do it fast. We want to make the same mistakes and start with biomass. Cause we can't breathe what we burn, no, no. Breathe, but we burn. For crying out loud, when we gonna learn that?
That's We Can't Breathe What We Burn by local songwriter Jay, that's the letter J, Bruce, 38. For KBOO News in Portland, I'm Ryan Stroyer.
We've got the technical knowledge that we should start to eat.
The time is 6 p.m. and you're listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7 FM. Tonight on Labor Radio, we will be listening to the Union Edge. We will hear a discussion on the difference between men and women in the workplace, followed by Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio, talking about the struggle of low-wage workers in America. And at 6:30 is Prison Pipeline with a discussion about marijuana legalization in Oregon, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7, so stay tuned.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Laborist Talk Radio. My name is Angela Bachman, and I'm here with Brittany Sheets today.
Hey, everyone.
And we also have Deb Klein joining us from Cleveland Jobs with Justice. Deb, welcome back for our Feminist Friday.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here, and always a pleasure to add to Feminist Friday.
It's always a pleasure to have you.
We enjoy your input, and we also especially enjoy your input during the week as we are furiously sending emails back and forth about all of the ridiculous news stories.
Well, and it's always, there always seems to be so much fodder out there. It's like, well, what do we talk about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no drought of things that can be discussed that, you know, should be brought to light.
This is true. What do you have for us this week, Deb?
Well, there was a really interesting article a little earlier in the week about a former Google executive, and her name is Ellen Petrie, and I'm probably going to blow her last name because I've never heard of her before, but her last name is Lentz, I think, or Lentz. And she talks about how we as women should obliterate the word just from our vocabulary, that we should not be saying that word because it weakens us and weakens our position and takes away our power. And she's talking about, like, when we say things like, I just wanted to check in, or I just was wondering, or I just want to give you an answer. And if you start to think about it, I kind of think she's right. Mm-hmm. Because it weakens your position. And it's funny how just a little word like just, and I just said, yeah, just a little word.
how a little word like word just, yeah. That sentence by itself, it's amazing the difference.
It really is. And she was paying attention, and she just started to notice. I mean, sometimes you have to use it, because I just did. But in other contexts, how it really weakens your position as a woman. And she is saying that we should stop using the J word. Mm-hmm. And then I started to think about other words that we use as women and how it we kind of give away our power. And I know that we as women a lot of times apologize all the time.
Yep.
You hear us saying sorry. Now, I do know, and I know from past experiences and working with a lot of women, though, a lot of times if you hear a woman apologizing all the time and saying I'm sorry for everything that happens around her that she doesn't have direct control over, a lot of times means that she may be a survivor of some type of abuse. Because by saying I'm sorry and apologizing ahead and for things going around, it's trying to avoid whatever type of abuse may be coming at her. But it's really powerful when you start to think about the language that we use as women, that we have to be very careful because it weakens our position.
It's interesting. And I kind of, like, as I was thinking about this week, I kind of thought about it more. And it's like I was kind of analyzing my own vocabulary. And sometimes I say things and I could definitely be more direct about it, but I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I want to sound nice, but at the same time, I think sometimes I need to, like, yeah, eliminate words like just and be, like, more direct and just, like, do you have my answer, yes or no?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, and no one else could see this, but as Brittany was just saying that, she was making typing motions with her hands, and that's exactly what I was thinking about, too, is that in an email form, it's even harder to communicate the emotion behind your words.
Yeah.
So we end up softening, I personally end up softening things to make it not sound like I'm being demanding or, like, overly professional with people that I'm on, that casual business, you know, you're on terms with someone where you're still business acquaintances, but you're kind of friends too. And like, how do you draw that line?
I do that a lot with, I definitely, like, I have different tones of emails with different people because I do a lot of the scheduling down here. So like, I kind of have like a preset tone with people like I'm reaching out to kind of for the first time. And then like, depending on like the degree of like how their email comes back, a lot of times just depends on like the language I use and sending it back to them. And like, it's really hard to find that tone because sometimes like, I feel like my tone might come off wrong, but like, that's not how I meant it. But like, I'm sending it through text, and that text can be read in different ways. So it kind of almost depends on what mood you're in when you read that email, depending on the wording.
That's true.
And I wonder, do men really obsess about this that much?
That's a really good question, actually.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
I do the same thing. It's like, oh, okay, am I coming off too strong? Am I coming off too... How is the other person going to perceive this? And I know there are times... especially if I'm trying, and in text messaging, I think is probably the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Worst for all of this, because you're firing off a text really quickly, and sometimes your tone, and I'm probably very, it's very easy for my tone not to come across correctly on a text, because I'm very sarcastic. And when you're in person, you know, communicating in person with someone, the sarcasm can be dripping off your words and your face. But when you're doing a text, how does the sarcasm come through on the text? It doesn't.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, that is one of the biggest things that I have. I can definitely say, yeah, it's a big issue of mine, too, is my sarcasm where if I'm kidding about something. It's really hard to portray that in a text message unless, like, you were previously kind of joking with that person and they totally understand that you were both joking. Then it's kind of like you pick up on it. But for the most part, that's a really hard thing to portray in a text message.
It is. But even in an email... But it goes back again as why do we as women have to obsess over the words we choose so much?
Right. That is a good question.
And do men do the same thing?
I'm definitely going to have to, like, you know, Google this a little bit, see if maybe I find, like, some sort of, like, study or something. There's got to be a study out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well,
I'm very
interested now. I back in one of my layoff periods, I did consulting work. And I did this 8-hour presentation called Is It Still a Man's World? Of course it is. Even back then, and that's how I know about how it'll be like till the year 2062 until we catch up if we still go at the same rate we're going in earning power to men. But I used to teach, the whole idea was to teach women how to communicate and get along in a man's world with communication techniques. And that's why this was kind of interesting to me when I came across this earlier this week. But there's subtle little things, like especially when you're negotiating. In my past life, as I say, I used to do a lot of negotiating, that contract negotiations like I do now, but negotiating for policy changes. But there's subtle little things, like when men walk into a room, men always stand up to greet one another so they're on the same level. And we were taught as women, maybe not so much your generation, but mine, that we didn't stand up, that we stayed seated. So that directly put a man at a higher level and had power over the women, because we were in the seated position and the man was towering over us. So, and it really is funny, because especially when dealing with men in my generation, you know, I, of course, always stand up and shake hands, and sometimes that can rattle them. Because
really?
That's very interesting.
Wow.
And so when you're negotiating, especially whether it's negotiating in a union contract or negotiating for policy changes or whatever, that can start to give you an advantage, because it can rattle some people because they're not used to that.
That's
so it's all about, it's a power game. And eye contact and all of the things that we were taught in the older generations, you know, women don't make eye contact with men.
Really?
There are all these little games. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You have to remember, I mean, I'm getting pretty close to 60 here, so, you know, we came out of the kind of like the June Cleaver, as I say, the
True.
June Cleaver era, where our mothers were at home and still were waiting on our fathers hand and foot when they came home and came in the door. So it was a kind of a different, I came out of that, I kind of just, my generation was just beginning to think about not staying home, you know, and going out into the workplace. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
it's kind of interesting.
It's very interesting. And on that note, I kind of want to say thank you to your generation of women, because we have come a really long way in only one generation.
Yes, you're welcome.
I mean, we still got a long way to go, but that's a big difference.
Yeah.
A really big difference.
So we have to stop saying just.
Yes,
that's
let's
right.
do that.
That's a start. That'll be our start point. But we've got our end, Deb. We're at the break point. As always, there's never enough time. And thank you so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure. I love being here.
Awesome. That was Deb Klein of the Cleveland Jobs of Justice. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman. And you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. My name's Angela Bachman. I'm here with Brittany Sheets today.
Hey, everybody.
And we also have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio, one of our favorite Michiganders. Buck, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure to be with you ladies on Friday. We appreciate participating on the Union Edge.
It's always a pleasure to have you on Friday. Lots of fun, lots of talk. We always send, you know, articles and stuff back and forth all week and see, you know, what in the world's going on. Since we talk to you guys so much, I've actually found that I myself often pull articles and see things about what's happening in Michigan, and sometimes I feel like I know more about what's happening in Michigan than I do Pennsylvania.
That's part of my job, to inspire you. So hopefully it's working. So, you know, but all kidding aside, I guess I'm supposed to call it Picklesburg.
Yes.
For the weekend, right, instead of Pittsburgh, right?
Yes, we are having a pickle festival, and quite honestly, I'm really interested in this, and I'm kind of excited because I love eating pickles, and it's really funny because down here, like, Charles makes pickles every year, usually, like, end of summer, and we
sure.
gobble them up, and he buys pickles all the time. We're kind of like pickle connoisseurs down here. It's kind of funny, and I'm like, we have a pickle festival, and that's kind of the coolest thing ever. Yeah, they literally raised a giant pickle.
We have a Heinz plant here, or we did at one time. I may be closed, but over in Holland, about 50 miles to the west over on the lake. So used to employ a lot of people.
Awesome.
It's a good thing. Anyway, I'm coming to you from my screened-in porch today out here on the
lucky
humidity. So don't be surprised. I have a chicken that's up the street, a rooster who's on second shift, so you may hear him now and then, or maybe a dog bark here and there. But actually, it's pretty nice dog. It's better being up here than it is downstairs in the basement in the closed in room.
Yeah, you've got it right. We were saying earlier, we're like, we know it's such a nice day outside finally, and like we have had like two back-to-back days of like no rain, so we're kind of like jumping up and down excited over here. And I'm kind of like, you know, I wish we could just go on a park bench like somewhere and just do a remote for today and just, you know, just sit there and just feel the breeze.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that the first thing I wanted to talk a little bit about today is, you know, because this happens a lot. It happens, you've been hearing it a lot since we've had the, you know, the Fight for 15 and the Occupy movement. You know, there's nothing more that cheap labor conservatives love to do, and that's mock basically fast food workers or low-wage workers, you know, when they're losing their jobs to robots. You know, and what I find is that, you know, and there's nothing that inspires these cheap labor conservatives more than people demanding a fair wage. I mean, that just seems to get their blood boiling, and they come up with all these scenarios about how they shouldn't get it and why they shouldn't get it. They're low skilled and low paid. But, you know, my thought on that is if they're going to, you know, use robots to take positions, then all the more reason why they should get more money. You know, that means their labor's worth more. So, like I said, it's interesting to see when you say, you know, especially here when you have a $7.25 an hour minimum wage, and you consider, but there's no state in the union where you can get a one-bedroom apartment unless you work about 58 hours a week. So, like I said, it's really interesting to hear all this rhetoric about how to, you know, why, how these low-paid workers, not to their fault, are not due their time. You know, and what I find interesting about it is I did a little research. As a matter of fact, a young lady by Susan J. DeMoss, she did the research for me. I'm reading from a little piece that she wrote, is that fast food CEOs make about 1,200 times what their average worker does.
1,200
and, you know,
times,
and you would
think
Buck? That they would be getting rewarded for a job well done, but, you know, if you look at the sales, especially McDonald's, man, they're taking a dump. So, like I said, it's interesting to hear these cheap labor conservatives go around and you know, have these catchy phrases about how people don't deserve to make $15 an hour or the reason why they should be kept at seven, and the better reason why they should just get robots. So I find it interesting. But what we may find interesting is that these same people that are, you know, complaining and mocking these people, they're going to find out that they're next. And what I mean by that is if you look at the computers and how they've advanced and the softwares and what they do, you know, there could be an opportunity for they could replace things as judges, lawyers, you know, for sure bookkeepers and things like that. So there may be some people that are in the white collar that used to be considered safe, you know, that have about a 98% shot of having their job automated in the next 20 years.
Well, I think that's true, but I think there's also always going to have to be someone to maintain and keep track of that robot and make sure it's doing things correctly.
Right, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, it's real easy for these people to say. These are the same people, you know, that mock these workers and inspire everybody to, you know, let their jobs go to robots. But, you know, what they're doing is they're just, you know, most of these corporations, you know, we've talked about this before, Angela and Brittany, is that, you know, over in China, they're already making these robots that wait tables and do all these other things. And then the next thing you know, they're going to be making them to do bookkeeper's work and perhaps even write newspaper articles. You know, so
it's interesting.
It gets my blood boiling when I hear these cheap labor conservatives mock all these people for just wanting to get a decent wage.
Yeah, and something that I've kind of noticed is in the Applebee's, at least the Applebee's location near me that I go to, they've recently put these little, like, it looks like kind of like a tablet thing on your table, and you're supposed to be able to, like, order or talk to the kitchen with it and pay and all this stuff and some games that they make you pay for if you want to use and stuff like that. And I've kind of found, and I've, like, been observing in the restaurant, The people don't really want to use them. I tried using it once and it was kind of confusing. And I kind of also did not like the fact that the waitstaff was almost kind of forcing me to use it, because of the one time I was there, they asked, do you want to use this or you just want to pay like through me? I'm like, oh, I'd rather just pay through you. Here's my card. Go about your business. And then another time they came and just dropped it off and they were like, oh, you can just pay on there. And I was like, oh, okay. And then we tried to do it and it didn't work right. And we still had to like pay like through like the person, but then we had to wait for them to come back because they don't really check up on you, because they just kind of expect you to do it through this like tablet looking thing. And it was weird and I didn't like it. And yeah, I think it's the first step of trying to automate the process, and I don't think it's going very well. But we can talk more about that when we come back. So we've got to take a commercial break. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman and Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Welcome back to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
And we have Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio also joining us. Buck, it's always good to have you.
Always a pleasure to be with you, ladies, and be on The Union Edge.
Always great to have you, Buck. We always have good conversations with you. Man, if I could just talk today and stop tripping over my tongue.
It's okay. She hasn't tripped over her own name yet, so we're good.
You know, Angela, you brought up a point before we took the break, and you were talking about how there would be someone to have to, and you're actually correct, to look over these robots and manage them and maintain them and things like that. But I'm going to give you an example of what I was talking about when I was talking about bookkeepers or accountants. Think about the thing that's out there called TurboTax, or some of these softwares that are, like H&R Block has one, and I use TurboTax. So how many, 10 years ago, you had to go to someone, an accountant or a friend or someone who knew something about the tax to get your taxes done.
No, not necessarily, though, because you could still do it yourself. You just had to fill out the physical paperwork and send it in yourself. So I don't think this is really all that different. And also, those companies have a live chat and a phone call thing where you can get someone to help you. So I don't know how different it is.
But still, I use it, and I'll give you an example. I use it, and I used to use a person.
Okay.
You know, and so, and that's what I'm trying to get to is that, you know, and the easier that they make it, every time that it comes up, the less people will be using regular people. Look at, you used to get a bank a check, and now you just get a receipt from the bank.
I was just going to use a banking example.
White collar people that have been running around mocking these fast food workers and all these other people, they're going to have to someday pay the piper themselves.
I kind of hope that they do get that wake up call, just because of, even though it'll be too late at that point, I do really hope that they get this wake up call and realize what they're doing to other people. Because I kind of feel like through this whole thing, a lot of these people who are like upper in the systems of sorts have really lost that connection of humanity. And I really feel like that's a big growing problem, is the fact that they treat everyone just as numbers and profits and margins. And they've kind of lost the fact that when you do these things, these are actual people. And to them, it's almost like when you talk to them, these people aren't worth anything to them. They're just worth another dollar in their pocket. And I feel like that's a really big problem that we have here. And it's a really big leading issue that I think more people should really think about.
You know, and well said. We should think about that every time we go to a restaurant, we've all seen it. You know, where these people not only have to that work for a low wage, they get a lot of abuse from customers in regards to in doing their job. Whether they put one too many grains of sugar in the coffee, not exactly 30 French fries or something like that. So, like I said. It's just a good practice to make sure that these people can make a decent living so that they can have health care and they can raise a family and take a couple weeks of vacation. But you know, I think we're actually getting there, because we have had this discussion for a long time and it continues on. And we continue to have issues go by the wayside, such as, gay rights. And a lot of the things that have to do with human rights. So eventually, hopefully your generation will be able to get down to talking about the number one thing, is inequality in wages.
And something that kind of goes with that, I'd like to note a little worker victory here. I was perusing earlier today, I think Progress this morning. I like to read them. I just kind of find them interesting. And I came across an article saying that there's a class action lawsuit that advanced, and it claimed that Abercrombie employees were forced to buy Abercrombie clothes. Now, this is actually kind of something that I find is really interesting, because Abercrombie's not the only retailer that does this. I know for a fact that Hollister does this, Aeropostale does this. I know the Abercrombie stores, there's Abercrombie and Fitch, and then there's actual Abercrombie. They do this. And I've kind of seen this trend in other stores too, just because I frequently do shop at the mall. And I've had friends who've worked at some of these stores. And though these stores give you a pretty steep discount for working there, because these clothes are usually pretty expensive clothes, the stores will give you kind of like 30-40% off to, like, you know, buy those clothes there. But something I thought was kind of outrageous was that in order to work at these places, they not only judged you on your style, but you also had to wear their clothing. They want you to wear their clothing and pretty much almost act as a model while you're working in the store. And you have to use your paycheck to do that. So not only are they paying you these minimum wages, they also expect you to buy out of your paycheck their clothing. Though at like a 40% off rate, 30% off rate might, okay, it's a nice, you know, nice discount. But at the same time, it's still like, that's still, the stuff is still expensive. You can't just go buy clothes every time the season changes because you have to wear something for work like this. Like, that's just, that's not okay.
Yeah. And I thought, what I thought was interesting about this was that the reason, what Abercrombie was arguing was that their policy didn't explicitly state that you had to buy their clothing. It says, I quote here, clothes, accessories, and footwear that are similar in style and fit to the brand and that are consistent with the current fashion season and colors, but aren't clearly that of a competitor. So how does one do that?
Yeah. Especially because of all of these brands have like a signature, like some sort of script, like on their jeans. You can almost, you can tell the difference between the different brands because they all have a different like design that they sew on the back pockets of their jeans. Mm-hmm. And they all have little like insignia emblems that are embroidered on almost all of their clothing. So you can look at something, or at least someone who's of that age range that shops at these kinds of stores. I mean, I can look at like a pair of jeans and tell you, oh, that's a pair of jeans from Hollister versus that's a pair of jeans from Abercrombie and Fitch, because I know the way that the signature is kind of like sewn on the back pocket. Or you see that little emblem that's like on like the left chest of almost everything. Right. And you look at it,
it's,
and you go,
really,
oh,
obvious.
That's the Hollister emblem, or oh, that's the Abercrombie emblem. So it's like, yeah, you can't wear a competitor, but at the same time, that almost limits out any other store.
Yeah, if they want it to be of the same style, it pretty much does, which is why the employees ended up winning this lawsuit.
Well, I would argue, I think also, you look at, and I don't, you know, myself shopping myself at Abercrombie, but I would argue if they're forced to do that, buy those clothes, not only can, working at Abercrombie's, can they not only not afford to buy the clothes, they can't even afford to go to McDonald's for dinner.
Oh, exactly.
Yep.
So, you know, and another one that does that is Walmart. You know, they basically got these shirts, these khakis and these purple shirts that said Walmart, and forced the employees to buy them and wear them, and, you know,
Something I found interesting about that is actually those employees had a recent little victory, because I guess Walmart tried to push their dress code to the point of you couldn't wear the clothing you wore that within those colors in their dress code couldn't have like a brand marker on it anywhere. And from my understanding, they were told that they had to repeal that part of their dress code because it was actually for union purposes, because if they were trying to rule that so that they couldn't wear like union insignia or like pins or anything like that, and they made them change that and said that was too strict and it was a discriminatory dress code because of it was one, it was kind of hard for employees to find, you know, like a plain shirt, because they wanted like polos, something with a collar, and a lot of times those have some sort of something kind of like embroidered on like left chest or something like that for whatever the brand is. It's actually kind of hard to find them without it. And they decided that the NLRB decided they had actually to pull back on their ruling just because of, you know, it was too strict of a dress code for the employees. So that was an interesting, and that kind of made me think of this and the fact that, you know, like you can't wear a competitor, but all of that stuff and the way it's stamped and presented in the different stores, it makes it really hard and really narrows down to where you pretty much only have one option of where to buy your clothing.
The good news, though, is that this stuff has been going on. This hasn't just started in the last year or so. This has been going on quite a long time. But it's always been so quiet. And what the encouraging part is you look at, you know, you look at the Fight for 15, like I mentioned before, and the Occupy movement, which has kind of slowed down somewhat. But people are starting to pay attention, and they're not staying, under the radar anymore. They're getting out there, and they're demanding, and also, you know, protesting and bringing awareness to this inequality in wages. And so, To me, I think that's a good thing. I think if you look at history, there comes a point when people basically are just pushed to the end, and finally they're starting to fight back. So I see that as a good thing. And organized labor has to, not worry so much sometimes about whether those some of these folks that are out there need to be members of the union or not. They need to basically help them gain these wages and gain these benefits, and it'll come back to serve them well in the coming years.
I agree. I think this is really great that people are kind of stepping up and really starting to like dig their heels in and fight back, because I think it's going to lead to a really big shift. I mean, we're already seeing the shift in the movement, but I'm loving the fact that I'm seeing this shift, and I'm really seeing kind of like a rebirth of like the labor push from like, it's almost like switched from back in the day when we were at like the steel mills and the factory organizations and stuff like that. And now it's almost switching to the new norm, which is, you know, a lot of the retail and fast food and stuff like that. And sure. I'm really excited to see, you know, where this keeps leading as things go on, just because it's going to be an exciting fight. And I'm glad that we're a part of it.
Exactly. And you talked a little bit, I know we're getting short on time, but, you know, just the workers at Papa John's, the article you sent me this morning, just the idea that they stood up for themselves and got this class action suit started and are going to get, you know, some back wages, and I kind of hope this guy spends some jail time. That's a good thing.
I agree.
And that inspires all every workers in every other restaurant to do the same thing.
I agree. And for anybody who's curious, that Papa John's article, we posted it on Facebook earlier. So come check us out on Facebook. Just look up The Union Edge. We've got the link there to that Think Progress article that they wrote about it and a little write-up about it. So check it out, guys. It is pretty interesting. And I'm glad to see, you know, workers getting another win here. But we've got to run, Buck. We'll see you again at 2:30 with your guest. And we'll talk to you soon.
Have fun, ladies. Good talking to you.
Alrighty, that was Buck Gino of Work in Progress.